evening, and welcome to Mondo Eros. My name is Stephen Otero, and I'm your host for this evening. And this is our seventh broadcast here on the new adult channel for bbsradio.com. And tonight I have a special guest, a gentleman who I've just met recently, but he's become a pal. And he has a very interesting perspective on life in New York City, on sexuality. And he sees it from a very interesting place. And he has a lot of cool things to say. Tonight, I'm proud to present for the first time Alex Zola, the creator of the Zola System, which is a really fantastic blog that you should search out and read. And we're going to have some conversations tonight about his blog and his adventures. And so I'd like to welcome Alex. How are you?
I'm fine, Steve. Thank you very much for having me.
That's my pleasure. And it's I just want to let everybody know that this is Alex's very first appearance on the radio anywhere, so I got him first.
Yeah, well, you know, aside from my high school radio, but we all know what fumbling around in high school is like.
Well, your blog, the Zola System, has really gotten a lot of attention.
Yes, it's very, very gratifying. Very gratifying.
Yes. And it's really fantastic. And you know, I give you a lot of credit because you got a lot of guts. You put yourself right out there, and particularly in the interviews you do on there with our very good dear friend Susan Crane Bakos. And
You can find those interviews on www.sexyprime.typepad.com.
Yes.
On her blog. Yeah. And of course, they've been reprinted on my blog at www.alexzola.com. And this last one that we did, posted last week and reposted on Open Salon, which was a very simple question, you know, are women kinkier than men, has actually received a lot of interest and a lot of page views and a lot of hits, and people seem to be very, very interested in it. And
yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of in and of itself is kind of interesting, because all Susan did was pose that one question to me: are women kinkier than men? And then it just kind of went from there.
So, and she also gave you a very interesting title: you are the spanking man.
Yeah, well, there's only so much you can do with nicknames, you know. Poor Jip Skunk Bastard from the from Steely Dan got stuck with Skunk due to a specific indiscretion, and I had more than one episode of spanking, and now I am known as the spanking man, apparently.
Well, then the question is, are women kinkier than men, particularly at this time in the year 2009?
I would have to say yes. I said in the interview that, you know, basically, I feel that when I'm meeting women in a sexual context, I'm the blank canvas on which they paint, you know, on which me to do, or men in general to do, you know, commit kinky acts upon them, if you will. And, you know, I mean, I've had many instances where I've been asked to do things, you know, most recently of the spanking variety. And, you know, you just kind of go along with it. It just seems like the thing to do, you know?
Well, that you're just trying to give the woman what she wants, right?
That's generally it. You know, I'm a gentleman. If she says spank me, what am I going to do? I'm a gentleman. I spank her.
Yeah, but I'm sure you do it in a gentlemanly way.
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends. it depends. You know, sometimes it's they seem to want a couple of nice little whacks on the rear, and sometimes it's a 2-hour-long session of, you know, just going on the rear end there.
But what do you think is driving it? Do you think it's the fact that so many women now are in, let's say, careers that were formerly, you know, which could be, say, male careers, and that they're feeling pressure now? I mean, traditionally, bondage and discipline, S&M, you know, you look at it that it was for, like, men who were in, like, these very stressful, powerful jobs, and they needed to surrender. Or is it something of that nature? Or do you think it's just that, hey, you know, it's just something that's part of them?
You know, that is a good question. And I honestly would have to say that it's one that I've really given a lot of thought to. Mm-hmm. And I can't necessarily say, you know, yes or no that women are in more stressful positions or not. I mean, obviously women have made great strides in the workplace.
Yes.
I can tell you that this one particular young lady who was mentioned in this one spanking session that lasted 2 hours, as I was spanking her, she did start saying, "Oh, yeah, spank me harder, spank me like my father should have." And I don't want to get involved in the father issue, obviously, because, you know, that's no place anybody wants to go. But I think that maybe there is also an element of an entire generation being raised in a very permissive environment. You know, we were the first generation to be nurtured along by our parents, you know, sent to arts and stuff like that. I mean, you know, we weren't spanked. We were grounded. So maybe there's an element of, oh, I've been bad, maybe I should be spanked kind of thing going on.
Well, that ties into a lot of the other material that's on your blog. Now, I know there has been, you used the term, that there's a book that came out recently called Guyland.
Yes.
And it sort of talks about, you know, a generation of young men who really are guys. They're more like grown boys than there are men. And they have a permission to act like that and stay like that for a very long time.
There, you know, you see a lot of that recently, more and more bars in New York City, and even in other cities I've been in Detroit, in, you know, when I go home to see family, and in Scottsdale, Arizona, there are whole bars that are kind of popping up in, you know, an attempt to give, you know, to capitalize on that market, the Guyland market, the kind of the frat boys that have never gone away. And,
right.
You know, interestingly enough, I was in one of those bars with a friend, and he's a well-known, he's not a, you know, grossly well-known guy, but he's a decently well-known guy, and a couple of people, you know, here in New York, and a couple of people, you know, noticed him, and as they were doing shots, I was talking to the barmaid. So here we are, and we're talking, and something about how the music didn't come on that I had played on the jukebox. And, you know, I admitted being a little upset. And instead of just doing what other bartenders would have done, which is, you know, refund the money, she hops up on the bar, pulls down her jeans, revealing her thong, and starts screaming, "I've been bad. Spank me, spank me, spank me here." And, again, I'm a gentleman. What can I do? You know, so I spanked her. And while this is going on, I've got these guys in the background, "Yeah, whack her again, whack her on the ass for me." And they're all doing Jaeger bomb shots. And the owner happens to be sitting right next to me. So after the little tableau is done, I kind of lean over to the owner and I say, "Does this go on every night?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, it goes on 3-4 times a night. It's great. You know, she likes to be spanked. These guys love to watch it." I was thinking, okay, there seems, you know, so there, you know, there's a whole seeming new community out there of people who are kind of stuck in this, of this, you know, frat boy, you know, and the women who seem to love them kind of mentality, you know, and it's becoming more and more evident around the country, I believe, you know, and hence that's what, you know, and you see it in New York as you're kind of walking up and down more and more bars devoted to this, more of these kids running around on Thursday nights, you know. And so it's kind of an interesting phenomena, and it's beginning to really impress itself into the consciousness of America. And I'm kind of one of the very first, I would like to think that I'm one of the first people who's getting to watch it on a, and it, you know, kind of, you know, look and see which way it's going on a kind of a first-hand basis, and be, not only that, but I'm removed from it because I'm just the wrong age for it, you know.
Having well, gotten out I of wouldn't say college that because
you know
90s.
You know who I think is a very good who could be a possible good role model for these guys would be George Clooney.
George Clooney, he in his own way, I think you may have a point there. In his own way, he's sort of turned his adolescence into a box office success, and you have to give him
yeah.
credit. I mean, even the whole deal with the Ocean's movies, right? I mean, it's just a bunch
right.
of guys hanging out, you know? Yeah, you may have a point there. And who knows, maybe it goes back to the Rat Pack for that, you know, if you want to.
I think that's
know.
Where it kind of like it originates. But in terms of Clooney, you know, he always, you know, a lot of times in interviews, he'll say, call me a guy. I'm a guy. He uses that terminology. He doesn't say man. He says guy. And he's always very much, you know, with his guy friends, you know, they come first. They are the ones that helped him get through a lot of the tough times in his life. And, you know, one thing you got to say about the guy is loyal. He's loyal to his friends. And he doesn't let his friends down.
Yes, that is definitely true.
You know, I always think about him. What I like about him is I admire him for the fact that, you know, he makes no bones about it. You know, that he's a guy. This is what he does. This is how he lives his life. He doesn't want to get married. He doesn't want to have kids. He's honest about it, which, I mean, if someone is with him and is expecting to have that thing, hey, he lets you know right at the beginning that this is how he lives his life, and he doesn't want all that. So if you're going to go on that ride with him, hey, and then you might better be honest as well.
Well, absolutely, and you know, you kind of makes you wonder if you know. So if it's the rise of Guyland and the rise of you know the kinky sexual acts out there, it kind of makes you wonder what kind of sexually kinky acts is George Clooney into? Is he into spanking? You know, it kind of makes you think. You know.
Well, he certainly has. He's certainly been with lots of beautiful models and lots of beautiful actresses.
That he has,
and
yes.
And that it certainly is available to him. I think, you know what it is, it's the fact that, like you said, this particular generation never had to face the tough one. And also, I think when you don't have to face those things, your energy goes in a different way, in a different direction. And why not explore these things?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's that. I would like to believe, personally, that a lot
yeah.
of this is exploration.
Yeah.
You know, the society, it's not so much that society is permissive of these things. These things have been going on forever. It's just at this
oh, yeah.
point, every, you know, spanking and certain, you know, S&M acts have just made their way into the mainstream, into more of the mainstream.
Yes.
And so I would like to believe that, yeah, it's exploration, but I also think that there's a disconnect going on. And this is, there's an emotional disconnect, and I think that, you know, Susan and I touch on this in the Kinky Decade,
right.
You know, piece, that this emotional disconnect is actually seeming to be enhanced by computers and IM, and things that are supposed to be bringing us closer together are actually enhancing the isolation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get curious about an act, and instead of going out and making an emotional connection with somebody, you place an ad on Craigslist, you know.
Right.
You know, I'd like to meet someone to be spanked on Tuesday. So, you know, you meet for a drink, you go home, bam, 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 and then, you know, you both go on your way. There is no physical and emotional contact anymore. Or it seems that it's being, that the computers are enhancing the isolation and that it's only through these acts that people are meeting other people.
Right, but also it could also be that the fact that they're also accelerating the process whereupon, you know, years ago, it took longer to get to that part, that point. But now, because we have Craigslist and we have these places where you can just meet people right away, that just accelerates the process of getting from point A to point B without having
to go through a lot of stuff in the
process.
I would definitely say, as a bartender, that dating is becoming a lost art form. You know, watching people over a bar, watching people that, you know, and how they're interacting the first time they meet, I would definitely concur with you on that. Dating is becoming a lost art form.
Oh, yes, yes. And I also wanted to mention the fact that that besides the blog, that, you know, you have this firsthand experience because you are a professional working bartender. You are a working man.
Yes, I am. I am, as somebody once put it, the aristocrat of the blue collar folk, which I wouldn't go quite that far. I would say I'm more like the keeper of the asylum and I've decided to become an inmate, you know, which is pretty much what bartenders are. Members of, you know, we're kind of like, what do they call them, prison trustees?
Well, the bartender was always the father confessor.
Maybe that's why these women ask me to, you know, spank them or whatever. Maybe they feel the need to confess to me and then, you know, need me to dole out their penance. I mean, I don't know. But, being a bartender is an interesting way to observe human nature.
Yes.
And to, you know, see and hear and, you know, get in touch with what people are doing and thinking, you know, on a certain level.
Yeah.
You know, and that level is me as a legal drug dealer feeding them just enough of what they need to let me know everything I want to know. Perhaps that's putting it in more of a, you know, say grossly poetic way than it should be. But, but that's pretty much what my job is, you know. I am the legal drug dealer and father confessor for a certain class of people in the United States of America.
Yes.
And it can get pretty weird.
Well, I think also, you know, it's good because you're reporting to us from the trenches. You're letting us see what is happening. I just find it so fascinating that, you know, when you break down these old rituals, these old dating things, what really happens, especially, you know, as you're as you extend your single years into later in life, and when you choose not to get married, when you choose not to have kids, what pathways are open to you?
Well, you know, I'm still of the mindset that I would like to get married and I would like to have kids. And of course Susan likes to always, you know, to tease me that, oh, well, you know, you just have to find one that likes to be spanked on Tuesdays instead of all during the week. but people who are getting, it seems at certain times that there seems to be a growing amount of people who are extending their single years, as you said, and I'm beginning to see this more and more, specifically at the place where I work, which is a finer dining establishment, and here in the city, and it seems that as people are getting, you know, kind of, they're extending it, they have certain expectations, as you would guess that people have, but these expectations are getting a little bit surreal, insofar as that they expect certain wine at a certain time and certain food at a certain time and certain conversation at a certain time. It seems to getting very set in their ways. And maybe that's, you know, I mean, I can remember my late father, you know, telling me, you know, listen, you know, I got married a little late. You know, don't you get married late because you get set in your ways and it's very, very difficult to, you know, break those patterns. And I think that a lot of it is that when you hit a certain age, men and women, you stultify a little bit. You know, men get curmudgeonly and kind of, you know, misogynistic and misanthropic and, you know, it gets harder and harder to meet someone, and harder to keep it fresh, you know, and harder to relate to somebody, you know,
right,
on certain levels.
But I think it's also the, like, it's a generational thing, because when I look back when I was growing up and I saw my parents' friends and family members, you know, that was expected of them. They did it and they got through it, and some were successful and some not so successful. But it seems that when you don't have that, and yet I feel like for example, in my own family, my cousins are all married men. They all have families. They're devoted to their families. So they did it and they achieved it. But, you know, that, again, you know, they had the choice to do it or not to do it, but it was so ingrained in them, and it's what they wanted anyway, so they went ahead and did it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And they made the sacrifices along the way.
Maybe that's part of you, what you were getting at, you're getting into a generational thing of people who have never had to face a World War II scenario. You know,
right?
Yes,
right.
Yes. The generation that, you know, I have with Susan Crane Vacos, and I have been, you know, examining, you know, kind of say 30 to about 55 people who came to the cities, you know, as youngsters, and then moved back to the suburbs and the exurbs. You know, we call it post-urban culture. This post-urban
right.
cultural group. Maybe they hit the end of Vietnam, but for the most part, this group never had to face something along the lines of World War II. Yeah, we had the existential crisis of the Cold War.
Right.
But, the concept of mutually assured destruction, you know, MAD, pretty much everybody knew that if you go, everybody's going to go. So it was no big deal. We never had to face a personal existential moment. And make
right.
our decisions of how, what, the way we wanted our lives to run. You know, like, you know, my grandfather came back from World War II and, you know, married my grandmother. You know, boom, end of story. You know, that's what he wanted. He'd seen the world, he'd seen the war. He settled in Michigan, you know, where he was from, and that was it.
Right.
And I think you're coming into a group at this point that didn't have to face it. And so, and with all these choices available and the rise of the internet, you know, toward the end of this all, and, you know, this permissiveness per se, but this entire, you know, the rise of the art porn film in the 70s, you know, which leads us to porn and all this kind of stuff along these lines, and then the real fetishization of porn, which we've seen recently,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, all these things are open, all these choices are there for a grouping of people that never had to make a decision over how they wanted their lives to really run. You know? They never had to face what Camus called the absurd moment.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
so now,
absolutely true.
You know, so now, instead of, you know, having made their minds up and settled down, you know, with a wife or kid, they're still out there. And, you know, specifically in New York, you had all these choices. We had all these choices when we were young. Oh, you know, if not her, then it's going to be her. You know, you're getting a little older now, and those choices are beginning to go away. You know, so maybe
yeah.
this is the absurd moment for that post-urban cultural generation.
Probably
you know?
It is. That, you know, it's like what Susan also says, like, you know, white guys are fine, but you know what? You're not all it.
Oh, well, we like to think so still. Come on.
Yes, yes. Sorry, Susan.
We like
we'll
to have our little
we'll home. Disagree with you on that. But I think that probably is that when you do face that, well, you know, I always feel that the male midlife crisis in general gets a, does not get, I don't want to say it doesn't get the respect that it deserves, but it doesn't get, it's not treated as seriously as it could be, namely because I think most of the people who go through it don't treat it that way. I think it can be, in some instances, almost like a shamanic awakening, where you're forced to look at yourself and your life and say, is this what I really want? I've lived the first half of my life. Is this what
right.
I really want? Not what society wants of me, not what my parents want with me, but what do I really want? And I think at that point, you go a little bit crazy because you got to figure out, what do I really want? And then it may not be. I don't want the house in the suburbs. I don't want this. I don't want that.
Well, I was talking with a buddy of mine last night, and the poor guy has hit 40 with a major in midlife crisis. He's been working. I've known him since we've been 18. He happened to work at a – he was putting his way through culinary school, and he was working at this place called Pizza Piazza, now defunct, as a bartender, and then Bayamo, a little further down Broadway. And he was right across from my dorm at 10th and Broadway, the Brittany, and, you know, where my, you know, my – classmates and my dorm mates, pardon me, included people like Adam Sandler, you know, and we would go in there and we'd all hang out. We all knew each other. And Dave's always been working in the service industry, and now he's hit his midlife crisis running. But his midlife crisis is interesting. What are the midlife crisis that we all thought it was in the 80s? You get the tattoo, you get the motorcycle, you pierce the ear, you know, boom, you go riding off into the sunset with the much younger, you know, woman on the back of the thing. You've divorced the wife, right?
Right.
Well, we've all missed our starter marriage. You know, so
yeah.
Dave's sitting there telling me, this particular buddy of mine, saying to me, my God, Alex, what am I going to do? I mean, should I move to the suburbs and teach kids how to play baseball? Man, that's what our midlife crisis is going to be for this generation? Ooh, we're pathetic. You know, we've really got to work on that midlife crisis thing.
Yeah.
You know, and perhaps it's because we've been out there in the realm of the kink, you know, and with the fisting and the spanking and the, you know, beat me, whip me, make me write bad checks kind of mentality. Maybe if that, you know, maybe we're coming through a midlife crisis of wanting to be normal.
Yeah. That could be one possibility, because you go to that extreme, then maybe that's what you want to try. It's just like the guys who did all that, when they hit their midlife crisis, then they want to go to the extreme and try, you know, the S&M and that stuff. So, you know, maybe it's always the case that the grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah, and, you know, there are moments within the world of kink or putting yourself out there as the single male who's trying to be, quote-unquote, open to the experience, end quote, you know, in New York. I mean, again, this is, you know, from the interview that Susan and I did, you know, I'm sitting there one day at the bar, and I'm having a couple of beers. It's after work, and this lovely, lovely girl, lovely, lovely young lady, beautiful, long, kind of auburn hair, wearing a really fashionable scarf, sits down next to me. We start talking. She says to me, "Can I confide in you?" And I said, "Okay." And I figured, I'm a bartender, right? That's what I do.
Sure.
Who knows what the hell she's going to tell me? Is she going to tell me she's breaking up with her boyfriend? Okay, no problem. But she said, "I'm a practicing autoerotic." I thought, okay, this is a little weird. The first thing that went through my head is I should have grabbed her by the throat and said, "Nice to meet you." But, you know, that passed quickly. And, you know, it just, I had this horrible, horrible vision of becoming Robert Chambers.
Yeah.
You know, for the Nouveau 40 set. I was like, okay, yeah, that drink's on me, and I got to go home now. Discretion being the better part of valor. But when you've been in that milieu for so long, you know, and single within that milieu for so long, you know, other things begin to look attractive. Maybe that's the whole deal with the new male midlife crisis.
Right, but then I could also paint for you another picture. Like, let's say you were one of those guys who did get married, and let's say you had a couple of kids, and your wife put on weight.
Boy, it would fill my mother with such knockers if I did that.
Right.
Boy.
But would you really want that? I mean, I'm sure you've seen those couples and you've seen those kids. I mean, would you really trade what you have for that?
That's a very good question. I think to a large degree, and somebody commented on this exact thing within the blog, is that perhaps somebody who is utterly normal would bore me. And there might be a lot of truth to that. You know, maybe they would bore lots of people. But, you know, again, a lot of, you know, things with adults, you know, between consenting adults, there is a school of thought that says, you know, that should be left, those things should be left behind closed doors. So how do we know what those people that we see, the nice people with the two kids doing hand in hand, walking down the street, what do we know what they're doing in their house? I mean, my God, David Lynch has made a career out of making movies about that.
Right.
You know? So, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe it's the outward appearance. You know, maybe she spanks him at night. Who knows? Maybe he ties her up and leaves her tied to a radiator for days. We'll never know.
Possibly,
you know?
I got a feeling that might not be as true as, you know, at least from the situations that I have observed out in those areas. Now, I could be wrong, but I think that, you know, if you gave it a long, hard thought and you've seen one of these guys and hung around them and, like, would you really want that? Because I know I don't. And you know, looking at what you've read, what you've written, I can see a lot of that in myself. I admit that I know I came out of that grouping. And, you know, this year I hit the big 5-0, and I'm saying it right here and now. And yet, in this year, here I am doing this show. I got this show. I have the blog myself, my own. And yet my crisis probably has been the fact that I've become a caretaker son. I first took care of my dad when he got Parkinson's, and I took care of my mom, and she has dementia. So that's perhaps my crisis of facing that moment where I stepped up to the plate.
Well, you know, there is one thing that, you know, kind of off the top of my head, and again, this is, you can find this on today's post on Susan Crane Bakos's blog, you know, Sexy Prime at www.sexyprime.typepad.com, is she asked me a question about how, if housewives were,
yes,
you know, be, you know, have come to me and, you know, wanted me to spank them or wanted me to do this or this, that, or the other thing after reading these posts. And, you know, I said that, you know, that, you know, unless they're getting divorced, I really don't want, I'm no homewrecker.
Right.
And, you know, maybe what we were discussing, the lovely couple walking hand in hand down the street, maybe what it is just that there seems to be a lack of communication in these marriages.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on the post that we did, when the repost of the Kinky Decade that was reposted on Open Salon, two men actually responded very interesting comments. One about how his wife is much kinkier than him, and he knows it, and he lives for it, and loves it, and can't wait till her back gets back, you know, into position, because he wants to do all kinds of things with her. And another gentleman wrote that, let's see if I can get it here. Although I did worry that my friends will see that I read this post, so much good material here, ... And I find that interesting that, yes, women are kinkier than men. They want these acts committed upon them. But a lot of men, you know, are very open to doing these things, to trying these things.
Yeah.
And there just doesn't seem to be communication between these particular partners. And in the one case of that one gentleman who left that particular, you know, comment on, you know, Open, you know, on this post, which you can find at www.opensalon.com, and Alex Zola, all as one word. You know, it's in that particular gentleman's case, you know, I mean, I wonder if he's actually had a chat with his friends, or whether they, you know, sit there and like, hey, kiss your wife? Yeah. You use tongue? Yeah, good. You know, you wonder whether they actually discuss this, or they do the whole guy thing, you know, which is, you know, oh, that's good. See those tigers today? you wonder what these people would be interested in trying, you know, given the opportunity.
Yeah, that would be the whole thing, is given the opportunity. Probably they don't. It's just you know, it's a strange thing. I just, you know, it's the how everything is going these days, but I certainly think that I would invite you, extend an invitation for you to come to Sexy Spirits and have a talk there as well. You know, it might be interesting to have maybe a spanking class or a spanking party.
Well, I don't know how much I could actually teach people like that, but I'd be more than willing to give it a shot to to impart what little technique that I know, and basically, you know, how to save your shoulder and your wrist from, you know, undue pain.
I saw another blog last year. Someone said that spanking parties are the new cuddle parties. So, you know, maybe we could become like spanking party facilitators and charge people money to take a spanking class, or first to do that, you got to become a spanking party facilitator.
A spanking party facilitator. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. It would be really funny if I saw one of my ex employers there. That would be very funny. So some rumors once flew about one of the personal life of a long, long, long time ago about one of my former employers, and I was just, you know, you hear these things and you kind of wonder, you know, and you think, ooh, wow, you know, what, it, you know, his house burned down and they found a dungeon. Ooh, interesting.
Wow.
You know, I mean, and,
this whole thing could be written into an interesting script, and maybe we can sell it to George Clooney.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, George, listen, man, don't worry about it. I'll teach you. You want to learn? We'll teach you how to spank, you know? And, you know, comically, I didn't even want to spank the first woman that wanted me, you know, that was begging me to spank her. It was just something I fell into, if you will. You know, she just really liked to be spanked. And, you know, again, what can you do, you know, if you're a gentleman? You're always taught from a young age, you have to be a gentleman. Open the door. Help this young lady with what she wants. Well, in this particular case, what she wanted was to get whacked on the ass.
Well, you know, it's also interesting. In a lot of classic Hollywood films, there was quite a few spanking scenes in those films. It was done quite often, and yet you don't see that anymore.
Well, I think that maybe part of that, and maybe even part of the entirety of the spanking in general, you know, and, you know, to be perfectly honest, with most of the young women that, you know, men who spank them, it's just a couple of really nice, harsh whacks on the ass,
right?
You know, and then moves on to other things. However, with the rise of domestic disturbance, and there, as we know in the media, there have been some horrifying stories of women who have been beaten horribly. I mean, just horrible stories. It's almost as if it's an acceptable way for a man to show physical and almost a violent dominance over women that is pleasurable. And, you know, I think that might be part of this as well, is that, you know, I not to say that there weren't less cases of domestic violence towards women in the past, because I think there were probably just as many, but they went unreported.
Yes.
You know, and I think that now it's just become, this has become an acceptable way, you know, for men to, if you will, reaffirm their manliness, you know, if that, you know, makes any sense whatsoever. And you could get into a host of psychological issues after that, but, which I am not qualified to do, you know, regardless of how much therapy I've been through. So, you know, but you could probably make that argument, and if somebody really wanted to make that argument very strongly, I think it would hold a lot of water, a lot of weight.
And possibly also, you know what it is that it's, like you said, a lot of these men of this generation did not have that that defining moment, and maybe in a sense also.
I was recently in Virginia Beach with a friend of mine, and he is a Navy SEAL operator, and he had asked me if I had ever shot a gun before, and I said no. You know, no, it's true. I am from Detroit, but I have never fired a firearm before. So he taught me how to shoot, which, you know, is the equivalent of being taught by Picasso cubism, you know, and it was a fascinating glimpse into this world of target shooting at this particular, you know, point. But when you're target shooting, there is the common thought is that it would be violent. The act itself is not violent. It's zen-like. It's meditative. It's how you stand. It's how you breathe. It's how it's just like shooting a bow and arrow or throwing darts. And there is no, the only violence per se is when the bullet leaves the gun. But there, but I found it not reaffirming of my masculinity or anything of that. That a lot of these people are like, I shoot a gun, my gun's big. Look at me, look how big my, you know, my dick is. Da 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 da.
Right.
No, it was a Zen and meditative thing, and perhaps, you know, that's what that generation is lacking. The fact that they haven't had that, you know, as we were just, you know. As, you know, you had mentioned, that they don't have that masculinity, and they feel that, you know, through, for whatever reason. And, you know, spanking is how they regain it.
Yes, yeah, so the guys who would be called, you know, the guys who would be called sensitive New Age guys.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys who really went to an extreme in terms of discovering their inner femininity and their sensitivity, but... In that
the guys who listen to James
Brown,
the guys who listen to Jackson Brown all the time. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So they lost all that, and you know they did all those things that was supposed to make them, you know, so sensitive and so wonderful. But it turns out they lost the women at the same time because that's just not a turn on.
Well, you know the old joke. You know, what's the definition of sensitive guy?
Yeah.
You know, the guy who sleeps in the wet spot. You walk in. I mean, how many women really want to sleep with Alan Alda all the time?
Right.
Yeah. You know, regardless, the Hawkeye Pierce may have thumbed his nose at at the powers that be, but he was a sensitive guy.
Right.
He was a nice guy. He was sensitive. He didn't have, you know, maybe, you know, again, that's part of it. This is their way of showing that they're not sensitive guys and that they're not, you know, going to be turned on by Yanni and, you know, and all of that. Although, interestingly enough, I just blogged something about Yanni, you know, on, my blog
spot,
Zola System, right? www.alexzola.com. You know, he got busted recently. What did he get busted for? Domestic disturbance and steroids. Yanni is using steroids. Kind of makes the entire thing puts the entire Barry Bonds thing into a different kind of light, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, Yanni's using them too.
what would he have to use them for?
Yanni? Plucking the harp harder? I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
You know, I can see, like, for a baseball, why a baseball player would use it. And that's the other thing. You know, just, I don't want to go too far into that. But, you know, this whole thing with the baseball players and the steroids, you know, it's like, what do you think is going to make those guys hit that ball like that? Come on. You know, not that I want to go that far because I don't know a whole lot about it, but it's like, you know, are you really surprised that these guys are taking stuff?
Well, you know, I was invited to try out for one of the Mets farm teams back when, and I can tell you this, I have never used a steroid in my life. I adhere to the Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth diet for baseball players, hot dogs and beer. And if I would go the other way with a pitch, which is waiting for a pitch on the outside part of the plate, it's swinging a little late and driving it. These guys are hitting it 400 feet. I am 6'1", about 210 pounds. I am basically shoulders, arms, and chest. And if I can put that ball 210 feet, I'm lucky. I'm a lucky, lucky man. You know, I mean, these guys hitting 450 feet homers the opposite direction, I'm looking at those guys thinking, ooh, wonder what your breakfast of champions is.
Yeah,
but you're not hungover.
Well,
so,
I would say that I think you are a very lucky guy. I think that, you know, you have carved out a place for yourself. I think, and that your observations are being picked up. People are responding to you. And
how many people get the chance to make a complete ass of themselves in public? You know, Lou Reed back in the day, various punk rockers, and me. I mean, you know, what's better than that? What's better than that? You know, getting nicknamed the Spanking Man by, you know, you know, come on, it's fun. And I'm a lucky guy, and I feel very fortunate, and I feel very fortunate that this blog is reaching an audience. You know, many bloggers, you know, don't, and, or, you know, they get a little upset, and it doesn't. And, you know, I'm very grateful and gratified that people are reading, And it's, you know, they're reading several blogs now, not just mine. They're reading Sexy Prime, which, you know, as I've said before on the blog, I think it should be daily reading for people. You know,
absolutely.
Susan Crane Bacos is Sexy Prime. I mean, I think it's great. People should be, men and women should be going to that blog daily. And, of course, be going to my blog daily as well, but that, you know, goes without saying.
Absolutely. You know, Susan Crane Bacos, she is the dean of sex writers. I mean, all the wonderful books that she has published.
Best-selling sex writer internationally for the year of 2008. Absolutely. Congratulations to Susan. And you can, and you know, if you have any questions on where to get the books or whatever, go to Sexy Prime.
Absolutely.
They will take you absolutely right there. And the books are fantastic. Absolutely beautiful. And I got to choose models for one or two of them, so I'm a happy
man.
Oh,
great.
Yeah. Well, you know, she showed me pictures, and I said, yeah, her.
You can get to casting that way.
Yeah, well, it's the best I can do. What can I tell you?
It's great because you also have this great sense of humor about yourself, which is very important. And, you know, I'm glad to see that there's finally a guy up there, you know, because I know many of the sex bloggers in New York City. Most of them are all women. And, you know, I was waiting to see, where's a straight guy going to come up there?
Well, you know, I'm the straw man for the dumb straight guy who's getting up there and saying, yes, I do these things.
Yeah.
You know, somebody recently sent me a comment where they said, you're a wittier, more literate Tucker Max. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I know exactly how to perform the anal sex act, so I wouldn't have gotten myself into that trouble.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it was a very, very flattering thing to have somebody say, because, you know, Tucker Max has carved out, as we were talking about Guyland, he's carved out a niche of writing these stories and blogs about Guyland that are fascinating, you know, and definitely something to go take a look at.
Absolutely. And there's also the average American male, Chad Clifton.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we are. That might very well be the most interesting thing about blogging, but, you know, that the average American gets to put their points of view out there and, you know, hit and get to interface with other average Americans, because, you know, the difference between George Clooney and a couple of friends of mine who are actors who have never quite made it is not much. You know, and as we've all remembered George Clooney from back in the 80s, when you look at the guy, you're thinking, Jesus, that mullet is horrible. I'm a straight guy, and I knew the mullet was bad. You know, so, you know, the difference, better agents, whatever, who knows what the
better
difference
haircut,
is.
Better haircut, you know, when he got the season cut.
Oh, come on, the Caesar cuts from the 90s were fun. When your girlfriend wanted you to get one, anyway. But it gives these people of an artistic point, or people who are trying to make it in the arts, blogging gives them a shot to put their work out there. And I think that's a great thing, a really phenomenal thing. And as I said, I'm extremely gratified that I've been able to find an audience. So, you know, keep reading, www.alexzola.com.
Absolutely. Yeah. Keep finding out more and more of the Zola system.
Oh, yes, the Zola system. Yes, my father's little view of life that he imparted to my brothers and I. My father being a street guy, a Holocaust survivor who did well in his life, but my father, like many folk from the Depression, my father being from the Holocaust, was convinced that Hitler was going to return at any given moment. So he taught my brothers and I five basic ideas that would help us, you know, just in case Hitler came back and help us hopefully succeed in life. And they were basically broken down like this. The con, which is a big name car, you know, con game that you do on a big, big level. Then there's the street hustle. Something, you know, you do, it's smaller on a level, you know, kind of like the rules or dating for dinner are good street hustles. Then there's the first essential scary truth. There's always somebody better than you. The second essential scary truth, 10% always goes to the house. And finally, the core belief that man always looks out for his own, his family, his friends, and himself. And with me, looking out for myself can be a full-time job. Because I've been known to get in my own way a lot. So,
but,
you know, I mean,
I think you're doing good with it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you giving me this opportunity, you know, to have this chat with you and hopefully get some more people to come to the blogs, you know. Take a look at the Zola system and Sexy Prop. You know,
well,
again, those are...
I think it's a really good, you know, I think it's, you know, it just gives you a lot of things to think about. And also it's a lot of things that I'm also seeing in what I do in my work at Sexy Spirits and the different erotic venues that I get to see that, you know, S&M, B&D, spanking, whatever you want to call it, all this stuff which used to be hidden away has come out and is going mainstream. It's no longer something to make you stay up at night going, oh my God, I'm into this stuff. What's going to happen to me? No, hey, it's just another thing, you know. And
no,
if you take away that stigma to it, then you don't. Hey, just let it go.
But you know, part of that stigma, at least in New York City, part of that stigma led to some interesting areas that are no longer in New York. For instance, Old Times Square, which is, you know,
yes,
now it's Disneyland. It used to be Disneyland for adults.
Right.
With all the X-rated bookstores and the little, you know, kit and grab places and all those, you know, interesting places where you could just, it was a movie theater and you could stand there. And I did this a lot when I was at NYU and didn't have a lot of money. I was a student. Get a beer, a couple of beers. Put them in my backpack, take the subway right up to Times Square, and
yes,
just sit there and watch the moving theaters that went by. It was a fascinating thing.
Yes.
And that's all gone now.
Yeah. Did you see Anthony Bourdain's show called Disappearing Manhattan?
I have not seen it yet. I have read parts of that website, and I think it's fantastic. And, you know, you're It's really, really fascinating stuff. The other day, I was over on the far, far, far west side of Manhattan,
yes,
14th, 15th Street.
Yes.
I'm walking by, and I figure, oh, let me walk over to 14th Street now. So I do. It's 9th Avenue and 14th Street. And it's a little dark, right? And I come up to that little Flatiron-esque building there where, you know, the vault used to be at the bottom,
yes,
of it. And now it's a Steve Hansen restaurant, and I'm just thinking, oh, in its own way, this is like a reverse kink kind of thing, but it's just so, so sad to see that this monument that Madonna, you know, used to, you know, we put her whole book, Sex, that's where she had it, you know,
yes,
you know, photographed. And there were times when I was younger and I was depressed, and you could call up the vault's hotline and say to them, hey, what night is it? And they'd say, it's spanking, spanking, and more spanking night here at the vault. And you just roar with laughter, kind of drive the depression away, you know? All that, you know, it's gone now. And which is sad to see, you know? And I saw all these kids running in and out of where the vault used to be, and I was thinking, oh, if they only knew.
Oh, you know, well,
they
should probably go. At the next time we have an event, I got to introduce you to my friend Michele Capuzzi. He's a producer director. He made this wonderful film called Pornology in New York, and it's set at the last night of the Hellfire Club.
Oh, I have a friend of mine who used to actually be a regular at the Hellfire Club. Now I was never there, but he used to tell me stories about the place. But the gentleman, Lenny, I believe his name, with the long beard who used to run,
yes,
it, he told me some interesting stories. And he actually, interestingly enough, my understanding, is dates from the Warhol crowd.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, that's, you know, taking it back another step to when New York was not quite as open, but probably a lot more interesting.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And some of the other guys who were in this film were our survivors. But it's interesting, you know, in the latter part of the film where they have the epilogue. Recently lost the lease. That seems to be the epilogue of these guys. They lost the lease.
A lease.
They lost the lease.
That's
which is a typical New York story now. Oh, I lost my lease.
Yeah, exactly. That's unfortunately the way it's going. I mean, you're seeing it more and more. Again, that friend of mine last evening, as he was going, we were discussing his 40-year-old crisis there. He was contending that New York is getting to be dangerous again, in its own way. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that just that day, because of where I work, I happened to get off and have to go see a friend. And I decided that it's boring. I wrote about this in the blog as well. I decided to walk down 19th Street between 10th Avenue and 9th Avenue. And on one side, you have a grouping of pseudo apartment houses and old kind of warehousing places. You know, it's the far west part of Chelsea. And on the right side, as I'm on the south part of the street, and I'm walking straight east. And on my right shoulder are these projects that used to be the most dangerous block in New York City statistically. There was, three, four murders a week, all kinds of shakedowns, whatever. I couldn't even get people to eye fuck me. If that's New York getting dangerous again, I don't know what's happening to this town. Yeah. So.
Well, the in one of the scenes in Disappearing Manhattan, when Bourdain's walking down 9th Avenue, and he says, look at this place. They're taking the hell out of Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I had the fortune to be fortunate, choose your particular word or, phrase, to live at the corner of 37th and 9th, or 38th and 9th, one of the two, for about 6 months back in 93, as I was, before I moved into my current apartment. I moved from the Lower East Side for cheaper rent, and then got my old apartment back in the Lower East Side for an even cheaper rent, but that's a different story altogether. But while I was there, I used to get to about 35th Street, and then there's a police precinct there at 35th and 9th, and I would take a deep breath, and I would have to sprint to my door because there were all these people around who, I was known in the neighborhood. There were all these people there who thought I was an interloper and I was going to be in nice, easy little pickings there. And now, you do that at 4 in the morning, and you don't have to sprint. They've got new buildings up, and they've got kinds of, interesting things going on. But, unfortunately, that's the way it is. The city has changed.
Well, another thing that he says in there in that show, which is one of the great lines, he's looking at one of the places, a beloved bar, which is gone. And he goes to this great Italian, an Italian supermarket they have hot food there. And he says, will this place be here in 100 years from now? Well, at least they own the building.
Quite funny. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's a good question. Do they even own the building? That is definitely the question.
At least they own the building. And he said it a couple of times when other places he went to. He goes, well, at least they own the building.
Absolutely.
They can't lose the lease.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably the trick, is the fact that no one owned the building. Everybody was just renting, and unfortunately, that's what happens.
Well, that's the unfortunate way New York is going these days.
Yeah,
it's quite unfortunate, but what can you do? The one thing we can definitely say about New York is it reinvents itself every 25 years or so.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I want to thank you for coming on the show it was really great to have you. And
It was wonderful. It was wonderful to be on the show, Steve. Thank you very much. Again, I'd like to urge your listeners to please go to the blogs that were mentioned tonight. My blog, The Zola System, at www.alexzola.com. And Susan Crane Bakos's blog, Sexy Crime, at www.sexycrime.typepad.com. And please give them a read and leave us some comments. Let us know what you think. Let me know what you think about Susan nicknaming me the Spanky Man. I'd be interested to hear.
Susan often gives you a verbal spanking.
Well, sometimes I need it. What can I tell you? That's to happen.
Well, it was great, and thank you again. And also thank you for Susan. Thank you to Susan, because actually Susan was originally supposed to be the guest tonight, but she suggested you instead, and I'm glad she did that. So
yeah,
if Susan's
like
out
Susan
there listening, thank you.
Yep, absolutely. So,
well, I want to tell everybody that go visit Alex's blog. It's Susan's blog. And you can also see my blog at sexyspirits.com. Thank you all for listening. And we will return next week at this time for some more stimulating conversation. This has been Mondo Eros, and I'm Stephen Otero. Thank you, and good evening.